You are listening to Mark Hatmaker Rough and Tumble Raconteur. This is a grab bag of old school Western martial arts, resurrected indigenous ways and empirical musings tinged with a heavy dose of respect, admiration, let's call it hero worship, for these hosses of yore. Hey crew, this is Mark Hatmaker coming to you from the Comancheria. Today, let's talk about some history. Let's talk about a fictional character, run back to actual characters. I mean, by character, I mean, you know, live in large stereotypes. And then a little bit about how to do some historical research and how to live the research. So we'll kind of call this one the real Josie Wells and the wonderful Clint Eastwood film, The Outlaw Josie Wilkes. This comes from the two Forrest Carter novels. Let's begin with an extract from Josie Wells' creator Forrest Carter's novel, The Vengeance Trail of Josie Wells. This extract was Carter's explanation for what made up Josie Wells' background. And he labeled this the Mountain Code. Here we go. Hang on, buckle up. Quote, "The code was as necessary to survival on the lean soil of mountains as it had been on the rocks grounds of Scotland and Wales. Clannish people, outside governments erected by people of kindlier land, of wealth, of power, made no allowance for the scrabbler. As a man had no coin, his coin was his word, his loyalty, his bond. He was the rebel of establishment, born in this environment. To injure one to whom he was obliged was personal. More, it was blasphemy. The code, a religion without catechism, having no chronicler of words to explain or to offer apologia. Bone-deep feuds are the result. War to the knife. Seldom, if ever, over land or money or possessions, but injury to the code meant war." That's in all caps, too. "Marrowed in the bone, singing in the blood, the code was brought to the mountains of Virginia and Tennessee and the Ozarks of Missouri. Instantaneously, it could change a shy farm boy into a vicious killer, like a sailing hawk quartering its wings in the death dive. It all was puzzling to those who lived within government, cut from cloth to fit their comfort. Only those forced outside the pale could understand, the Indian, Cherokee, Comanche, Apache, the Jew. The unspoken nature of Josie Wells was the clannish code. No common interest of business, politics, land, or profit bound his people to him. It was unseen and therefore stronger than any of these, rooted in human beings' most powerful urge, preservation. The unyielding, binding thong was loyalty. The trigger was obligation." Unquote. Now, that description of the Mountain Code, that is not just, culled from fiction. Mr. Carter was no mere spinner of fiction. The original Wild West was actually, historians call it the Great Southwest. And in many cases, it was a far bloodier battlefield than what we think of as our frontier movie Western West. Was right here in my stomping grounds of East Tennessee, the hills of Kentucky, Virginia, where my mining camp Scuffling originated, and also in the foothills of North Carolina. Then we kind of push it over into Missouri and Arkansas until we finally, move actually west to what we're far more familiar with. And what made a lot of this area so rough and rowdy was we had these immigrants coming in from Scotland, the Ulstermen, the Irishmen, these people, these border reavers. A fine history of it, and it's usually best whenever you're doing your histories to go back at least 100 years before you start more recent accounts, or just kind of like, trying to copy and being echoes and playing a game of telephone. But a somewhat recent one is MacDonald Fraser's the Steel Bonnets. That's a great, it starts you out in that area of Scotland along the borderland. I tell you what it was like in that hard scrabble environment, and these are the sorts of people who were coming over, hitting these mountains and setting up with this same sort of feuding, this same cattle culture. And then of course you've got these same people who are encountering all the indigenous tribes, and there's this melding. So the borderers do not remain strictly borderers, and even the indigenous peoples here do not remain strictly indigenous. There's this odd mix if we've got these different clannish, these honor-bound cultures, and also quick to aggression and quick to love, kind of melding and blending together and creating something entirely new. Now, this clannish mountain code, again, it met and blended with the warrior cultures more than a few tribes. Let us return to that original stock of the Scots, the Irish, Ulster, move from the fictional to the actual. It was a culture just as Carter described, as it was Josie Wells' stock. It was prideful, hard, and warlike. I know in recent accounts, you can find in books like James Webb's books, he will discuss about the fighting spirit of the Scotch, but I think it's more interesting to go back even further than that. Well, let's go from a 1900 volume by J.P. McCarthy. MacLean, just called it a historical account of the settlement of the Scotch Highlanders in America. And I'm pulling this extract just to show you, it's kind of an anecdote. It's meant to be humorous, but just shows you what the attitude was amongst these people. Quote, "These Highlanders were a race of tall, robust men who lived simply and frugally and slept on the heath among their flocks in all weathers, with no other covering from rain and snow than their plaidies," which is their, you know, tartan cloth covering. "It was reported the Laird of Keppoch, who was leading his clan to war in wintertime, that his men were divided as to the propriety of following him further, because he rolled a snowball to rest his head upon when he lay down. And says, and now they despaired of victory. They said, since their leader has become so effeminate, he cannot sleep without a pillow," unquote. So as we see, hardness was a virtue. It's even a joke to use a snowball as a pillow. We see this same thing in indigenous tribes. We see this amongst the borderers. We see this. This is no mere Easterners. This is what we think of as moving along the right along the seaboard states, New England, and what we actually think of the Enlightenment followers that were we think of in the, during the Revolutionary War. This is far more different, wilder sorts of folk. Again, Josie Wales talk, maybe a fictional character, but based on some actual circumstances and actual culture and characteristics. Now, there is a wealth of martial info. I'm talking tactics and history and strategy and woodcraft, martial philosophy from this original Wild West. And we'll be offering a bit of the history to the Indigenous Ability blog and also to this podcast. And if you're not a subscriber to the blog or to this podcast, I don't know why you're not. It's absolutely free. So, you know, there you go. And also to our free newsletter, again, also free, we'll be giving you a little bit more depth and detail. And primarily, we'll be doing the history area. And if you want to get all aboard all the free things, like I said, you know, sign up for them. They're free. And of course, we do have our black box subscription service. We'll reap the fruits of the actual tactical info. We will hold that back. We will not offer that up for free whatsoever. And this tactical info that melds this warlike disposition of the real Josie Wales mountain coat and the wise warrior ways of the Comanche, Cherokee, and Apache, to name a few. These are armed tactics, unarmed, stealth tactics, strategy, mindset, hell, mountain warrior philosophy. Let us look to another aspect that shaped these early ways, which was the environment itself. A lot of people forget what this new world was incredibly different. It was nothing like Europe. I know whenever I visited Europe, I'll see like the Danube. We've been fortunate enough to see the river, and we've read it of it in many history books, and I've seen many of the other great rivers of Europe. And it's just interesting that many of these that we see vaunted in history are not what I expected in reality. I live not 15 minutes away than four or five different rivers that dwarf the ones that I read on and all about sort of historical accounts. And yet right here, the waters were wilder, the mountains were meaner and rougher and more rugged and stretched out to such an expanse. The world was different over here than what these people were coming from. Again, I consider this description from another book, 1919 by Constance Lindsay Skinner. The book is The Pioneers, The Old Southwest, A Chronicle of the Dark and Bloody Ground. It's a lengthy extract because she's got a nice insight here. Quote, "As we consider the descriptions of the frontiersman left for us by travelers of his own day, we are not interested in his battles with wilderness and Indian than in the visible effects of both wilderness and Indian upon him. His countenance and bearing still show the European, but the European greatly altered by savage contact. The red peril indeed influenced every side of frontier life. The bands of women and children, the harvestings, the log rollings, the house raisings, were not there merely to lighten the men's work by their laughter and lovemaking. It was not safe for them to remain in the cabins, for to the Indian, the cabin was boldly thrust upon his immemorial hunting grounds, was only a secondary evil. The greater evil was the white man's family, bespeaking the increase of the dreaded pale faces. The Indian peril trained the pioneers to alertness, shaped them as warriors and hunters, suggested the fashion of their dress, knit their families into clans, and the clans into a tribe where and all were of one spirit, the protection of each and all, and unit of hate against their common enemy," unquote. Now, I'm using lots of archaic terms here, red peril and savages and such. This is just the words of the time. And Ms. Skinner's book here is fantastic because it's all coming from firsthand accounts, and some of these accounts I now have in my hands as well, I'm able to look at, but it's a great observation that it's just not the frontiersman that became shaped to it. The entire family, entire way of life, everything even about how a cabin could be constructed, how you did your work habit was built around a warlike or preparation for war. This is a completely different mindset where we go off and do our martial training. We have a regular day. Then we go, 7 o'clock tonight. I go in and I pretend to be a fighter. This is 24/7 with the people at these times. So whenever they offer a bit of advice, it's really fascinatingly different because it's the entire thing is just sparked through. through with sort of thought. This blending of warrior borderer's ways with indigenous warrior ethos with both necessity and choice. Let's go back to Miss Skinner's book here. Quote, into the pioneer's phrase making the Indian influence penetrated so that he named seasons for his foe. So thoroughly has the term Indian summer now to as a redolent of charm become disassociated from his origins that give us a shock to be reminded that to these backcountry folk, the balmy days following the cold snap meant the season when the red man would come back for a last murderous raid on the settlements before winter should seal up the land. The powwowing days were the mellower days the latter part of February when the red man and council made their medicine and learned of their redder gods whether or no they should take the war path when the sap pulsed the trees into leaf. Even the children at their play acknowledged the red-skinned schoolmaster for their chief games were a training in his woodcraft and the use of his weapons, unquote. See, that's fantastic. Everything that we take is really nice and wonderful, new agey, land-hugging ways. It kind of began in the late 60s and 70s with the falsity of the Carlos Castaneda scam. And then we see the Billy Jack movies, which I adore, where we just get this sort of hippy-dippy philosophy moving in. Originally, this is not how things were. These were really shaping things. Yes, there was an ethos for the lands, but both sides had this because they lived within it and they had to survive in it. But it's just not this peace, love, and harmony, and you know, love everyone another, brother. Letters, journals, and other musty tomes at the time hold copious info on actual old-school ways, and not just modern-day guesses or mere transfers of a popular martial art as an overlay. What was done then is not what we must assume was done. It was an entirely different practical and brutal beast. I mean, it had to be. Often what we see now, we'll go, oh, look at this. This is how they were doing the tomahawk work, and you compare it, and you go, no, this is just Filipino overlay, and this is not what I'm finding in these historical accounts. Again, that's why in the Black Box Brotherhood, I'm giving you what I find. Truthful. It's just not like, oh, let's pretend this Sinawali drill is this. That's just not it. I mean, Sinawali is a wonderful thing into it in itself, but if you're making claims outside of it, well, it's specious. Let's go back to Skinner's book. Quote, tomahawk throwing was the favorite sport because of its gruesome practical purposes. The boys must learn to gauge the tomahawk's revolutions, the distance of the throw, so as to bury the blade in its objective. Swift running and high jumping through the brush and fallen timber were sports that taught agility and escape. The boys learned to shoot accurately the long rifles of the time with a log or a forked stick for a rest and a moss pad under the barrel to keep it from jerking and spoiling the aim. They wrestled with each other, mastered the tricks of throwing an opponent, and learned the scalp hold instead of the toe hold. It was part of their education to imitate the noises of every bird and beast of the forest, so they learned to lure the turkey within range or by the bleat of a fawn to bring her dam to the rifle. A well-simulated wolf's howl would call forth a response and so inform the lone hunter of the vicinity of the pack. The forest's speech was not only the language of diplomacy in the hunting season, it was the borderer's secret code in war. Stray Indians put themselves in touch again with the band by turkey calls in the daytime and by owl or wolf notes at night. The frontiersman used the same means to trick the Indian band into betraying the place of his ambuscade, or to lure the strays unwitting within reach of the knife, unquote. Again, it lets us know everything. We hear, we're talking about, she's just making these small references to people practice their wrestling, their rough and tumble play, their tomahawk, their firearm work, even down to stalk and skulk and how to imitate and read the signs of nature and imitate the signs of nature. And all of it's just not because, oh, look, I can do these bird calls. It's meant to be communication during war. Everything was a preparation for war. And again, within the blog and the podcast, the newsletter, I'm offering these things in broad strokes. I hold back all the actual tactical information that is offered up for, again, that Black Box Brotherhood. We go deeply into these old school ways from the actual historical record. And, you know, it's not guesses. It's what I'm finding. And again, that Black Box Brotherhood ain't free. Too much work goes into it to keep that teat flowing for dabblers. I'm going to leave you with another extract that uses a term that pops up again and again and again in these old tomes describing the character of a truly new world. And that phrase is new Adam, as in Adam and Eve. It refers to those who went. It refers not to those who went to a garden. Well, it was a garden here, but this garden and the new world was not one of paradise, but one of peril. Men and women who were not ready-made by society, but forged themselves by dint of what they faced. And that's what they meant by new Adam. They were not constructed by society and then carried on from there. They got it, and this is whatever they had to forge themselves. They had to bring themselves into it and face it, became something brand new. To use a fictional correlate, they were the young Lord or Lady Greystoke stripped of the trappings of civilization, dropped into the jungle, and then forged into Tarzans by dint of survival in this new world. And that was what was required. Quote, yet in every cabin, whatever the national difference, the setting was the same. The spirit of the frontier was modeling out of old clay a new Adam to answer the needs of a new earth, unquote. Now, that's a fantastic quote there. And again, if all this is just rolling past your ears and you're really interested in more, I'll put the link in so you can see a print version of all this material and, you know, ponder these for yourselves. But I also ask you, I want you to hear this if you're interested in the Josie Wells, this new Adam thing. If you're ready to be a new Adam, a warrior of the twin worlds, ask yourself that. And if you'd like to be, only the serious need apply. Those that read the Mountain Code or listen to the Mountain Code as I just pronounced it, and you can feel it. If you feel it sing in your blood, man, if you're ready, you're probably ready then for the Black Box Brotherhood. Or if not, maybe you require a snowball for a pillow. Who knows? Anyway, there's going to be a link in the show notes. If you'd like to look more about this Black Box Brotherhood, we'd love to have you aboard. I promise you, there's mucho Mountain Warrior gold coming down the pike. The true ones out there won't want to miss it. And again, if you've enjoyed what you've heard here, you like what's going on, like, subscribe, share to the podcast, subscribe to the free email newsletter, take a look at the Indigenous Ability blog. Hell, just browse our site over there, extremeselfprotection.com, for hundreds upon hundreds of millions of products. Take care of yourself, crew. Love you. Bye. Well, if you dig what we just discussed today, I'd like to invite you to like and subscribe to the podcast. Hell, support it if you want. I'm not your dad. Do what you want. And if you're a glutton for punishment, just visit our website, extremeselfprotection.com. You'll find links to the blog, all of our products, and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of more pages of like musings. We'll be right back.